How y'all doing? Was that, was Batman there, right? Yeah, Ben looked at me and said, six or seven. I was like, yep. We're on a journey to find out how many weeks this one's going to go. Pretty exciting. We don't know ourselves. It may go long. We'll see. That'll be good. It is great to be with all of you today. If this is your first time with us, we're thrilled to have you. You may look at me and you see like this pen hanging here. This is my favorite pen of all time. So it's a lucky pen. Not at all. We actually have someone with a hearing impairment, and we are trying this out today. We've actually been trying a few things over the last few weeks. You may have caught it, may have not. Last week, Joel wore this under his shirt, and it was just way too muffled and noisy. So I'm wearing it out of the shirt, so if you see a little green blinking light on my magic pen, it is so someone that might actually hear us today for the first time. Sound good? Is that awesome? Yeah, that's great. So we have been in this series, and they're talking about no life hacks to faith-filled living. The fact that we have no shortcuts, that's a tough one to get out, to living a faith-filled life. And that what this means is that significance comes not from a couple secret life hacks or shortcuts that you can do, but from countless small decisions made over and over again. Faith-filled living is less about awe-inspiring actions and more about decisions that we make daily. So we are going through this series, and as I was thinking about this week and where we're at with generosity, I went back to when I was in high school, and there was a family that I came in contact with that were super passionate about something in life. They were passionate about pole vault. I mean, their whole life was this. Their kids were being raised on it because their son in middle school took an interest to it. His dad bought pits. They put a cement runway in their yard. This family was all out. They would video record stuff, show it to you. They started camps. They traveled for pole vault. I mean, they lived, eat, bread, slept. It was all pole vault. And I got pulled into this with a camp, and they saw promise in me. And as a sophomore, they invited me generously to travel with them in a big SUV all the way to North Carolina. Like, joining me, inviting me into that, I don't know if I would have invited myself as a kid into that setting. I was pretty hyper, pretty intense, and they invited me, and they brought me along to go to the Junior Olympics to basically catch a vision for what could happen and where this could go. And it was super inspiring, it was exciting, it was fun, and lo and behold, I just went all in. I actually, the next year, stopped basketball in the winter so I could pole vault around the clock, and I would just take 3 to 4 months off for football. Otherwise, it was pole vault year-round. And I did really well, ended up going to the Junior Olympics, placing, got college options, decided not to pursue it. I kind of burnt out by the time I was a senior. But their sons went on. Both got scholarships, were awesome, ended up winning the MAC out of CMU, and the other was an MSU vaulter, and he ended up winning the NCAA title. Incredible family. They are still coaching other kids to this day. Their passion for pole vault is inspiring. It's relentless. But the thing that was so impacting for me is how generous they were. They invite you to their house. They're open-handed. They invite you on trips. They would buy you poles if you didn't have them and lend them. I mean, it was all in. And this was for pole vault. I know. Some of you are like, I've never even seen that. You take a pole, you run down, you put it in a box, and you go really high over a bar. The record is over 20 feet for the world. And this was for pole vault. And for me, I'm sitting there thinking about this and going, generosity. We're talking about generosity for God so that people could see him, that we could be generous with our lives in a way that our passion for Jesus actually makes a difference in someone's life for eternity, not for, hey, I'm going to go be a vaulter or I understand this sport better. Like, this is a huge thing. And I was inspired by their family. How much could we do as the family of God with our generosity and inspiring people towards Christ? Because reality is Christ is more generous than we could ever imagine. When we think about generosity, often your mind goes to money. And the interesting thing is that prayer is mentioned 500 times in all of the Bible. Verses on faith are less than 500 in the scriptures. Money is referenced over 2,000 times in scripture. Think about Jesus' parables. 38 in the gospel, 16 deal with money. 10% of the gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, deal with money. 15% out of everything that comes out of Jesus' mouth that's recorded in the Gospels has something to do with money. So when your mind thinks generosity and it goes to money, that makes sense. But that is limited. That's only a portion of generosity. Generosity is so much more than that. When we think generosity here at New Life, we think time, we think talent, we think treasure. And treasure is money, but it's more than that. It could be your possessions, your cars, your house, an extra room you have, extra things you have, extra clothes. Does this make sense? Generosity is so broad and expansive. When we talk about generosity, we need to expand our minds about the possibilities and be envisioned by Christ and his example. Because when you read in 1 John 1, when Jesus came as the Word became flesh, I love the Message's version here. It says, the Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one-of-a-kind glory, like Father, like Son, generous inside and out. True from start to finish. That is God. He is generous inside and out. Christ in heaven gave up everything, all of it, so that we could become rich in him and through him. His generosity is unparalleled. It's unthinkable. When you think of God, you think John 3:16, this verse, for God so loved the world that he gave. That he gave. His one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. He is generous inside and out, start to end. He gave his one and only so that we could become with him, like him. And if that is what he wants for us to be with him and like him and to reflect who he is and his character, that implies and means we will become generous, that we will be a generous people. And so I'm super excited about the story we're going into today, because we're going to be looking at the habit of generosity, which can bring unparalleled freedom, deep joy and satisfaction, purpose and mission in our daily living. And we're going to look at a story where often we look to part of it, and sometimes we miss parts of it, but I want us to catch all the little pieces of it, starting with Jesus and his generosity that we see in this story. So before we go on, let me pray. Jesus, I thank you for today. Lord, I thank you for your generosity. God, I thank you that there is so much freedom when we will live open-handedly, when we will let go of our control and what we own or what we can accumulate or what it even can mean for us, the significance we get out of it. Lord, would you free us today like never before? God, that we would get a glimpse of your generosity and we would say, that is enough. Your generosity is good enough for me. And that we would reflect your generosity to those around us. Pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen. So if you have a Bible, you can turn to Luke chapter 19. In Luke chapter 19, this is in this part where Jesus is in the book of Luke going along, and then it says he set out resolutely to head towards Jerusalem. And this is in his journey. He is on his way towards Jerusalem, and this is what it says in 19:1. Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. Some of you have heard of the town Jericho, right? In the Old Testament, they crossed the Jordan River. They came into Jericho, marched around seven times, blew trumpets, the whole wall caved in. They went in and they took over, and that was kind of how they ended up taking over the land. And you don't hear much about Jericho. Jesus tells a story of the Good Samaritan on the road to Jericho, or Jericho. That's a new one. I like that one. And coming up with new towns here. And go find that one on the map. That'll be good. Jericho. And then this story comes up, and Jesus is in Jericho. And you're like, I don't know much about Jericho. And so I didn't either, so I read about it. The fascinating thing is this town was like unparalleled in the era. It was under Roman occupancy, but this was Herod the Great who did all the building. He built Caesarea Philippi or Caesarea on the water, the big, what is it, a port town for trade. He also built Masada, which is in the south along the Dead Sea, which was like this fortress on a plateau. He built that whole thing. He built huge palaces for himself, and then he also was the one that rebuilt the temple in Jerusalem. And you know where he got most of his money? Jericho. Jericho was the city of great wealth. And the reason it was a city of great wealth is because it had this rare tree called the balsam tree. The balsam trees of Judah were known worldwide from the trade. And what they would do is they would produce a sap that would come out that was used for medical benefits and perfuming. The perfuming industry alone was huge. And they would take this stuff, a pint of balsam sap, they could sell a pint for 300 denarii. You're like, wow, that's amazing. No, you don't, because you don't know what a denarii is. I didn't either. I looked it up. Significant. This equivalent, $20,000. One pint in today's market, $20,000. Perfumes would then turn it into almost 3.5 times that amount and sell it for $70,000 worth. The main grove in Jericho was 12 acres. Each tree produced 6 pints of sap for $20,000 apiece. That's $120,000 a year. They have 12 acres. They estimate 2,800 trees, 16,800 pints a year at $20,000 a pint. That's $336 million a year. This is an industry to be in. Balsam trees. In Jericho, and then the only other place in Judea was in Gedi, and the crops there were like a third of the size. So it was like, yeah, that's the small one. That's down on the southern Dead Sea. You had to travel even further. Jericho was like right in the midst of everything. $336 million a year. And Herod used this money and wealth to buy all kinds of stuff. And the Romans were not ignorant of this. They looked at it and go, huh, taxes for anything and everything out of Jericho. And they made so much money off of this. And the way the tax system worked back then is you could either have like a region of people that came along or someone who was really wealthy would like buy the rights to own the taxes. And there was like a little tax trade in there. And then you'd have someone that was over it all, like the chief tax collector. And often tax collectors, they were not liked. They were despised. One, because you're enforcing the Roman taxation of this, which in the Jewish culture was God owns the land. No one owned a home. Like, I have a mortgage, I own property. That didn't happen. Like, you owned your house, but the property was always God's. So the Jewish people looked at this and they're like, you're taxing on God's land. And these are his trees. And they wouldn't even let the Jewish people have the balsam sap and use it themselves. They had to buy it like anyone else. And so this was like a despised area of work, the tax collecting. And then they had freedom. Like the Roman government would say, on this area, we're going to tax 15%. But you have the rights to take it up to 30 to 50 if you want. Which is kind of like, do what you want, you just have to deal with the people. They ain't going to like you, but you could take 50% of it. So they had this freedom legally in the Roman law. And what do you think a lot of tax collectors did? Maxed it out to the full extent. And so this is the city that Jesus is heading into Jericho. And it says, there was a man named Zacchaeus. You know what the name Zacchaeus means? Pure and clean. So already you know, like, this guy's righteous. He's a good guy. He was a chief tax collector. Uh-oh, not good. In the region, and he had become very rich, which meant he's cheating people left and right. He's taken more than he deserves, more than he is allotted, at least for the tax, but within the Roman system, he was taking a ton of extra. And so it says, he tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass that way. And so he hears that Jesus is in town. He knows of this ministry. He's been ministering for like 3 years at this point. This is towards the end of Jesus' ministry. So he knows stories about him. He's heard miracles. He's probably even heard this dude like dines with sinners. He probably even knows that one of the disciples was a tax collector, Matthew. Like, he has one of my kind, hated and despised, in his fold. And Zacchaeus is just like, I know I don't need to get anywhere near this guy, but I want to see him. I want to see who this guy is. And he's just short, so he can't see him. So he runs ahead, and he finds a tree, and he says he climbs up in the tree. This is an image we have. Can you imagine? This is a rich dude. The reason I like this image is, like, he's dressed in fine cloaks. I mean, this is probably what he would look like. And then you got this huge entourage coming down, and he knows Jesus is going to walk right by this area. He's so short, he climbs up in a tree. I love that there's other people in the tree, too, because that's probably what happened. There were probably kids up in the tree. Who knows? People are just trying to catch a view of Jesus. And this was a common thing. And Zacchaeus is hanging out in the tree, and he starts to see him coming. He starts to see him. He's probably getting excited, thinking, what is going on? What's with this? And in this moment, what is this guy? What's going through his mind? I mean, Zacchaeus just wants a glimpse of him, but he knows he's despised. He knows he's probably feeling guilt for the sins he's committed in terms of taxing too much. He probably feels shame, which is self-contempt. Like, it's not just the action was bad, that he may not even like himself for what he's become through his taxing. And that idea that his name means clean and pure probably just haunts him. People made a mockery of him, I guarantee. Oh yeah, Zacchaeus, clean and pure. Sure you are. They probably made jokes along the way. And I think when we look at this story, why it's so impacting to me is because I think I'm there often. I find myself in this tree. That my own life, my own actions, this is another artist's rendition, and I thought it brought it home to the modern era. I think sometimes this is how we feel. We're like a little child holding to a tree, wrecked by things we've done, wrecked by things that were done to us in our past, wondering, can I just get a glimpse? That's all I need. And if you're there, I'm telling you, pursuing him is the greatest thing you could ever do with your life. Going to the extent of climbing a tree to get a vision of him, wanting to see what Christ is and what he is for. And if you're here for the first time and you're like, I don't get this whole Christianity thing, or you're just like, I'm wrestling with it, that's awesome. Keep pursuing, because God is pursuing you, whether you know it or not. He's walking your way, just like he was this day. He's coming for you. And when he sees you, he wants to say your name and invite you to follow him in a way that you could never imagine. And that's exactly what plays out in this story. Because as Zacchaeus is up in this tree, it says when Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and he called him by name. Zacchaeus, he said, quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today. I must be a guest in your home today. This is mind-boggling. This is generosity of Jesus. He has this huge ministry, this huge platform. He is walking through a city of great importance in the Roman Empire, where Herod the Great is gone at this point, but his three sons took over. One of them is around that he ends up seeing in court later in his own trial. But he could have pursued anyone in this town, and he sees Zacchaeus, who is looking for him, and he sees him and says, it's you. You I'm coming to today. And what's awesome about that is in the New Testament, in James, it says, come close to God and he will come close to you. The Old Testament says that if you seek him with all your heart, you will find him. Like, this is his promises to you. And this was playing out, that here's Zacchaeus, this guy who's corrupt, probably has shame, all this stuff, but he is seeking Jesus. And the promise is being fulfilled, that he will see him and he will draw close. And he says, I need to go to your house. If you'll go out of your way to get a glimpse of me, then let me come stay with you. It's amazing. And the generosity of Jesus is he gives his time. He's got a crowd. He's got all these disciples, anything. And you know, at this point, after the party Matthew threw, knowing he was a tax collector and it was pretty extravagant, the disciples were like, Jesus knows how to pick these guys. The chief tax collector in the richest city. Yeah, let's go to his house. I'm not sure what's going to happen here. This is going to be awesome. But I don't think anyone expected what was going to happen next. And in fact, the song we sing as kids, anyone know? Zacchaeus, we're going to sing it together right now. Yeah, we are. Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and a wee little man. And when the Savior passed him by, he said, Zacchaeus, you come down, for I'm going to your house today. Yeah, give yourselves a hand. That's awesome. And I thought of that song this week, and I go, what? Where's the rest of the story? That's it? Like, I'm going to your house today. Cool. The end. I mean, that's what we teach our kids. I get it. It's memorable. It's great. But at the same time, I'm like, if the story stopped here, it's good enough. It's good enough. It is. Why? Because Jesus saw him and says, I want to come to your house. That's good enough. That's more than good enough. That's great. That's his message to each and every one of us here, is I see you and I want to come be with you. That is the gospel. That is why he even came, generous inside and out, moved into the neighborhood. That is why. It is good enough. But the story doesn't end. So unlike the song, it goes on. And the crazy thing is two things happen. There's joy for the one receiving and judgment from those perceiving. Those who are looking on begin to judge. This happens all the time when you see acts of generosity. People around, they don't get it. They don't understand it. They're perceiving and they just judge. But those who are receiving, joy. Overwhelming joy. Listen to this. It says, Zacchaeus quickly climbed down. He took Jesus to his home in great excitement and joy. But the people were displeased. He has gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner. They grumbled. Generous people always have haters. They always will. It just goes with the territory. God knows it. He was so generous on Adam and Eve in the garden. And there's a hater, Satan. Did he really say that? And it's been the same way playing out for generations. Those who are generous, especially on God's behalf, when it just doesn't make sense by the principles of the world because they're operating out of a generosity that's fixed on a kingdom to come, living under a king that people don't understand, and they're generous in ways that make no sense, but God moves through that in powerful, powerful ways. And we need to move beyond those who are displeased or grumble, who judge and don't get it. They question the reason, the motive, the purpose. And you see, you can give your time, talent, and treasure towards God and the things he prompts in your life, and you will likely encounter resistance along the way. And how do you press past that? By just focusing on Christ. Focusing on what he wants in your life. What is he doing in your life? And this is what happens. It says, meanwhile, this is the fruit of Jesus' generosity, that he's given his time, in many ways his talents, he knows his name, he's bringing his whole platform, his entourage to his house, which is basically, as a rabbi, you're accepting. It's saying a lot for a rabbi to come to your house. It says, I accept this person. And it says, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord. If I have cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. Four times as much. I actually had the opportunity last week, unbeknownst to me, I knew I was going to serve in the New Life Kids. I was in the K-1 room, so kindergarten, first grade. Didn't know this was going to be the lesson, so I taught on this last week. And it was awesome. At this point, we gave everyone four like big bills. They were like $100 bills. And then I went along, and I was a tax collector. I said, one from you, two from you, two from you, all from you. And they were like, the last one, he was like, what? He got up and like walked off. And I was like, just wait. The story's not over. It's not just I'll come to your house. Because then Zacchaeus comes back and he ends up saying, I took one from you, you get four. And they're like, what? Now I have 3 + 4, this is awesome. Go to the next one, like the 2 got 8. The 4 who lost it all got 12. And everyone's like, what? That's awesome. These are kindergartners and first graders. They get it. Their eyes were like the size of softballs. Like, and I was like, what do you think about that? That's amazing. Like the generosity. Kids can get it. This is what generosity can have an effect on other people. When we will give as God gives. Give our time. Give our talents. Give our treasures to God and to those around us as he prompts. People will have a response. Just like those kids did. And listen to how this ends. Jesus responded, salvation has come to this home today, for this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save those who were lost. And what's so awesome about that, he's saying, you're a true son of Abraham. Right in front of everyone, the Pharisees were like, hey, we're connected to Abraham. And there was always this tension, and Jesus is like, it's a matter of the heart. And they're like, this guy, he's not living right. He's not doing all this outside stuff. In fact, he's stealing from people. And God's like, mm-mm, look at what just happened. He pursued me, and I'm going to pursue him. I'm going to go be with him. Not only that, he gets it. His belief is shown in his action. That his faith in me is now revealed in his action. His living of just saying, everything I took, I'm just going to give it away. Like I'm going to give half to the poor, and anything left, I'm going to pay everyone back that I stole from. Unbelievable. Now everyone's like, I wish I was in Jericho. That's like a free savings account. All those years coming back to me. Could you imagine if IRS said, well, we were a little shady over the years, and we're just going to kick it on back to you. And like the whole city of Ann Arbor got blessed. Everyone in the country would go, why did I move? Right? I mean, this is the reality that's playing out here. And so Zacchaeus, he just gives it all away, and God's like, man, this is a true son. Why? He has shown himself to be. This is why James says, you can have faith, that's great. Show me faith with actions and deeds, keeping with your faith. This is what it's about. If our faith is only so far as to say what we believe and what we get in the end, I wonder, is that real faith? I wonder. Because faith just for the end, that's not the point. The faith, yes, we have great hope and security, but that faith is to live out today and impact our living, our pocketbooks, our schedules, even our lives, our talents and treasures, how we focus our lives. And the beauty is generosity begets generosity. Jesus was so generous with his time, and it led Zacchaeus to be generous as well. Overwhelmingly generous. And the result of that generosity from Jesus was that this guy had come back to Christ. It says that he came to seek those who were lost. In the New Testament, being lost doesn't necessarily mean damned or doomed. It simply means in the wrong place. A thing is lost when it has got out of its own place into the wrong place. And when we find such a thing, we return it to the place it ought to occupy. And I love that because that's what Jesus did. We all have walked away. We all have sinned and disobeyed, and Christ came for us, died for us, went to the grave for us, rose from the dead for us to invite us back to the table, his table. And that's what he did with Zacchaeus. He says, I see you. You got yourself in a mess, and I want to come to your house. And when he does, he doesn't even preach a word about generosity to Zacchaeus. Doesn't teach about money, doesn't say about time, anything he's done, any wrongs, how to get right, nothing. He just says, I'm coming to your house. And the result is that Zacchaeus, he experiences grace, and that grace leads to generosity. When God invites you towards generosity, he's inviting you to become like him. He's inviting you to become like him, because that's who God is. He is generous inside and out. And there's thinking through practice on this. I just want you to think through your time, your talent, your treasure. Sometimes in our time, we just have more time than we realize. How do we use it? Schedule margin in your time that God might be able to use it. Other ways, you might actually schedule, hey, I want to go serve in two different ways this year. Schedule that in your time. If it's talents, sometimes make a list. Honestly, I've been doing that recently. There are more things I have information in and knowledge in that I could help someone with than I even realize. I just forget. We all do. You forget how much you actually know or how much you actually could serve someone else in areas of finance, or maybe it's music, or maybe it's decorating, or maybe it's how to get a mortgage a certain way. Maybe it's car problems, whatever. There's so much you know in this body right here. And then your treasure, not just your money, but your resources. How could you be open-handed and generous with it? Because I guarantee as God is inviting you into it, he's inviting you to become like him. And the little you give, when he puts his weight behind it, it can just go and go and go. Look at this story. Jesus gave his time. Zacchaeus gave a ton back. But from him, he had a lot to give. But that story has been going on for 2,000 years. God has made his generosity carry on for thousands and thousands of years. And so one of the things we have today is I want to invite up two volunteers with us, two people who have served on staff so faithfully. We have Melissa Mashner. And then Stevie King. Is Stevie with us? Awesome. We're going to have them come up, and I just want them to share, because there's so many ways that you can serve and give your time, talents, and treasures, but one of the big ways that we could use help is on Sunday. This is a little sheet we have. Is there a picture there? Is it coming? There it is. We would love your help in making Sundays vibrant, and I'm going to let these two speak a little more to that, because they've been taking the charge and helping mobilize us into doing this, and so here we have Melissa.
Thanks, Jay. Good morning, church. My name is Melissa Mashner. I'm the director of the Children's Ministries Program here at New Life, and it's a joy to speak with you today. If you look at these stats behind me, you can see we have a huge need all across the board at our church. Specifically in New Life Kids, I have 35 volunteers, 35% of what I need to run a full, strong, and growing program for our kids. It takes me a minimum of 21 adult bodies in classrooms to run a full Sunday morning of Sunday school. 2 weeks ago, I had six. When the Lord provides money in my budget to be able to do a vacation Bible school for our kids, when we have all of our materials covered, when we have all of the lessons ready to be paid for, but I have to cancel because we don't have enough volunteers, I can't stand here and say that we're doing our job well. Folks, these kids are amazing. I love them with my whole heart, and it's such a joy to see their lives be transformed in the smallest of ways if you serve. I have an ask for each of you. I would like you to prayerfully consider serving once in New Life Kids between now and the end of December. You may not love it, and that is totally okay. I think you will enjoy working with these kids, but if you're not a kids person, I still need your help. Sharing the load on volunteer appreciation, photocopies of lesson plans, or cutting out yellow stars for next week's craft are hours of work that I could use help with that will free me so that I can be training teachers to equip these kids. This is the next generation of leaders in our church. I think it's exciting, and where we have a great need, we also have a great opportunity to serve. Won't you be a part of that work with me? I certainly hope so.
Thanks, Melissa. Hi, everyone. I am Stevie King, and I oversee Hospitality Ministries here. For those of you who don't know, Hospitality Ministries is pretty much everything that happens outside of the odd and also includes our prayer ministers. So that is greeting, parking, info center, guest directing. I've been at this position for 4 years now, and in the past 2 years, I have seen a steady decline of people to serve on Sunday mornings. And I can honestly tell you at this point that we have a volunteer crisis, and I do not use that term lightly. Melissa has been struggling every week to fill her classrooms with adults, and today I had two greeters, two people who are willing to say, hey, welcome to New Life Church, and just hold a door open. It takes a half an hour before service. That's it. So I would just love to encourage you to think about your time, like Jay said, think about your treasures, think about your talents. Just utilize them for this church. I think, well, I'm like super excited about hospitality. Like, I don't care if you serve in that area, if you serve with Melissa, if you serve in tech. We serve a God who didn't come to be served, but came to serve. So I think for me, I see the crisis more in like, how and why are we not more like that God? This isn't just like a need that we have. Yes, do I need warm bodies to stand, smile, and greet? Absolutely. But really, as a church, we need to be working on becoming more like Jesus, becoming more like the God that we worship, laying down our lives and serving each other, serving the new people. Man, we've like had people come to Christ just because we have had a greeter at that front door. People have come up and asked, how can I give my life to Christ? True story. So like, imagine if we don't have that. Those are like missed opportunities. And I know that this might sound a little intense, but it's just, we're at a spot where at this point, we might not have New Life Kids, we might not have parkers or greeters if this church doesn't stand up. So I would just challenge you to do that and to pray about it. Thank you.
I just wanted to say with this, it is powerful to serve. When we say we want your help being vibrant on Sunday, vibrant for us is Christ alive in us. And that's what we want. We want to see this place filled with people who are serving, volunteering, upstairs, downstairs, in the parking lot, so that when kids come onto their classroom, they have a smiling face. They see Christ alive waiting for them. They see people at the door for the first time, welcome with a smile in the parking lot, so many different ways. And so these two, we have asked in there, we brought them up here because we want you to know their face. We are tasking them with pursuing all of you. So if you have served and you're doing that regularly, we're so grateful. Thank you. Please continue it. If it's been a while or you're not serving currently, We have information. We're just going to make phone calls. We're going to contact you. We're not going to try to, you know, like drag you in, twist your arm, but we're going to extend the invitation personally and ask you, would you volunteer somewhere on Sundays to help us be vibrant? So if you get a phone call and they say, hey, this is Stevie with New Life Church or Melissa with New Life Church, here's who they are. You know their face. They're doing a huge work for us in that way. And so I want to pray for them, the work that they're doing, and then pray for all of us with generosity. And as I pray, the band's going to come up. We're going to ask the prayer ministers to come forward too. If anything during this service is just God's prompting your heart or kind of drawing you towards generosity in some way, and would love to pray over that, we'd love to pray with you. So, Lord, I thank you for this morning. I thank you for Stevie and Melissa and just their hearts, Lord, to serve. Lord, that they truly believe that serving is a way of reflecting you, God, that their passion is for people to reflect your image on Sundays, that we would be a vibrant place where men and women are serving in so many different ways. Lord, I pray that through their efforts and even just you speak and prompt us in this room, Lord, that we would step up as a church, that we would fill in, that these numbers would change, that there would be way closer to full capacity, God, and that the result of that we'd all experience it. It would just feel much more vibrant and alive, and that we would be a place that's just so welcoming for new people. Lord, I pray for all of us today in this message, Lord, that we can remember how you were generous to Zacchaeus, Lord, that you saw him wanting just a glimpse of you, and you said, have all of me. I'm coming to your house. God, and I thank you for the second half of that story where he responded with joy and great generosity towards those around. Lord, I pray that you would keep in our mind that as we live open-handedly with our time, talents, and treasure, Lord, that you will breathe on it and move in ways that just is exponential to what we can imagine. God, and that your kingdom would grow as a result of this generosity. We pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen.